Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we talk about topics related to fundraising, leadership, coaching, and management for professionals in the nonprofit sector. I'm Janice Penning, and I'm here with my colleague, Margaret, and we're excited to have a guest today who is Sue McCoy, the Director of Major Gifts at the Stollery Children's Hospital Foundation. Welcome, Sue.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. So nice to see you, Margaret and Janice. And I said to Janice a long time ago, I'm a longtime listener, first time caller, but not a caller. Thank you for having me this morning.
Yeah, we don't have callers yet. That's a fun idea. But yeah. And Sue, I feel like it's very exciting because we used to work together many years ago and this sort of reconnected us. So it's been really fun to plan this out and to be here with you today. So we're excited to dive into this topic, which I'm sure, Margaret, you'll feel this pain, you know, having been in reporting up to a board of like, how do we balance our fundraising activities and our leadership activities. So you, like, first of all, let's start to like, what made you want to talk about this?
So I actually feel like we don't talk enough about it. And I think it was, it came out of a coaching conversation actually months ago when in the moment I was feeling the struggles of managing a team and reporting up to the CEO and ultimately to the board, but then also having my own portfolio of donors. And I think just in the moment, I was having all these requests coming my way. And I think the struggle that I have with someone like myself in my position is all of those are equally important. And, you know, I know that in many different positions, we always have competing priorities. That's just the nature of our work. But this I feel, and not just because I'm in it, that I feel it's, you know, it's the most important thing, but I really do feel that for any nonprofit, the position of a director of development that is managing the kind of the fundraising portfolio does find themselves in a challenging position, especially if they have a team of fundraisers. So providing that leadership and managing their own portfolio, and as I say, leading up to reporting up to the executive team, whoever that may be. Those are challenging and competing priorities. That where do you begin and who do you respond to when you need to respond to all three at the same time? And that's not easy. So that's where I just wanted to put it out there to say we need to have this conversation. And in fact, in a webinar I did a few months back, it had been recorded. And so a person who wasn't part of the webinar had seen it a few weeks after and had contacted me and said, look, I actually what you said really resonated with me. And I actually think we should form a kind of talking circle around this issue. And why don't we get people from across the country talking about it and actually coming up with some solutions, some tactics, some ways that we can deal with this. And if we don't come up with anything, then maybe it's just a support group that we come up with. But anyway, so we're having that conversation right now, trying to figure out how do we build this to be something more than just complaining about it, right?
Yeah. Sue, I love, because you talk about it as a trifecta, which sort of gives equal weight, right, to these three areas where your attention needs to be going. But I am super curious, all of us who have worked in this role, you know, there's a fire burning in every one of these three areas all at the same time. You know, what's worked for you when you've had those moments?
Yeah, that's true, Margaret.
Forming the support group, which is
a, yes. and you're right, it is the trifecta. Is when I was thinking about it, I'm like, that's exactly what it is. So you know, I'm a huge proponent of communication. And we can sit and try to wallow and figure out what is the next best step. But more often than not, I want to find out, you know, what do I need to do? Who do I need to talk to? And so never underestimate the power of communication. It's so imperative that we find out what's going on and if it's picking up the phone. And so sometimes, you know, if I've got that donor that needs a phone call and I've got someone on my team who is desperate for my attention, and then my CEO needs something from me, sometimes it's just a matter of, okay, I'm going to call the donor, going to call my team member, going to call the CEO. It might just be picking up the phone, but, you know, as we know, it's not always that easy either.
Yeah.
I've
found sometimes some good success with, you know, I don't have time to talk to the donor right now, but at least acknowledging, right? I mean, this is a super tactical, but the email back, like, I got your email. I know you have a question. I'm going to call you later today, you know, that sort of, so that they know you're thinking about them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's funny how I think that's the thing. Like, when we feel overwhelmed, we just, it's like paralyzing, right? And so you're, especially email, I think, you know, because it's just like when the bombardment, you open it up in the morning and it's like, there's this and there's this and there's this, and it's really easy to say that. So I actually think it's, although it seems simple, Sue, I think picking up the phone is so important, you know, because often like what we do is like we go back and forth on email, or we start down the road of like doing something without really clarifying, you know. I mean, my background actually, it just makes me remember, like, I trained as a librarian originally. And that was like the big thing was like the reference interview. Because they're like, just because somebody says they want something doesn't mean that's what they want. Like, you actually have to ask a few questions to make sure before you do all the work of helping them find that that's the thing. And I think there is something in this about like, we're doing a lot of emailing and not having enough conversations that actually get at the heart of like, what does your staff person need from you? And maybe Absolutely. On the surface, it seems like a tactical thing, but maybe it's actually an emotional support that they need from you. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because we're in this, you know, this remote world right now, where most of our communication is by email. I find talking to people, I spoke with a donor yesterday, for example, and again, you talk about paralyzing, Janice, I know exactly what you're referencing, because this was a donor I knew I needed to call, and it was going to be a big call, and I kept putting it off, and it was paralyzing. I'm like, it doesn't need to be this way. And so anyways, called her up, and I have to tell you, it was just such a great conversation. Nothing huge was resolved, but I needed to touch base on a few things. Anyways, after the phone call, I felt so just energized. I felt like I had just had a huge sleep. I felt rejuvenated. And I realized that for me anyways, I'm very much an extrovert. That's how I get my energy, is connecting with other people. So the more I connect with whether it be my donors or anybody external, internal, I just feel energy when I get off the phone with them. And so that's another reason for me is not to email, right? So not only to clarify the actual issue and to figure out what they need, but just from an energy standpoint, talk to people, right? Even like when I am in the office, walk down the hallway and talk with somebody, way more efficient, I feel, because you can go back and forth, right, through emails. I love the ability to communicate in person, ideally, or over the phone.
I feel like I've talked to people, you know, through the last year during these times of COVID, and the dread about picking up the phone is actually a little higher, because sometimes people are in super unexpected spaces, you know, that you might catch a donor who's just had a loss, or, you know, that, like a stress, or somebody in their family, is it like there, you just aren't quite sure what you're going to call into. How have you handled some of those concerns or situations?
Yeah. And that's a good point, Margaret. And actually not just donors, but even people on my team that I would normally call in a heartbeat, I now think twice. And I'm like, should I phone this friend? Should I phone her? Or should I set up a meeting? There's times I feel like everything now we have to set up, you know, video calls or a phone call, when in fact before I would just phone somebody up. But because most people are at home, they're in their personal space. You, like you say, you don't want to catch them off guard. You don't want to catch them in the middle of making lunch with, you know, before they would be in the office. And so you wouldn't think twice about it. I decided maybe a few months back, I'm like, this is ridiculous. I just need to call people. So I'll pick up the phone and, you know, I don't schedule a meeting with every single phone call that I make, because then it would just be a nightmare. But I'll phone somebody. And the first thing I say is, you know, am I catching you at a bad time? Because, you know, they could be in their car. They could be with their kids, whatever. I don't know. So, you know, it's interesting because I think I say that I said this pre-COVID too, right? I mean, whenever I phone somebody, I always say, am I catching at a bad time? Because then it does give that person an opportunity right from the beginning to say, actually, yeah, I'm just picking up my kids, or yeah, I got some really bad news. Now is not the right time. But I think you can't think about what their world is, because then, like as Janice says, then you do become paralyzed, right?
And I think there's the flip side too, which is that, you know, for a lot of people, there's such a craving, you know, for connection that, you know, I've heard a lot of people who maybe didn't talk on the phone as much now suddenly, you know, I find that like I'm phoning friends that, you know, normally I would have seen them every now and then, but now I'm like, oh, I should, you know, should phone and check in. And I also love the, like, I want to bring in, maybe you can tell the story, Sue, of the piece about innovation. So your three points are really about like staying focused, communication, and innovation. And there's a great story about sort of exactly that, like trying to create something that you thought your CEO wanted and it's not working. And then how like a conversation led to that. So tell us that story and what you learned from that in terms of this pressure to balance.
Yeah. So it's like you said, Janice, with in your librarian days, just because they're asking for something doesn't mean that they need it or need that, right? So, and I also think that oftentimes we don't know what we need until we have that conversation, and things get flushed out during a conversation, right? So this example was with my CEO, and it all had to do with just reports that I was sending him. And so donor reports and progress reports from our team. And so I was sending him the reports, and he didn't like the way that I was presenting it, just didn't like the visual, I guess. And so I was changing it up and then would revise it, give it to him again. And it was not meeting the needs that he had as he was reporting to the board. And he wanted to see different things. And this must've gone on for 2 or 3 months, kind of back and forth. And then we had a conversation and he's like, you know, just send me all the data. I'll create what I want. And I'm like, well, that shouldn't be the case. Like that, you shouldn't have to do that. We can figure this out. And so then we had such a fruitful conversation, because then I felt like I was a coach and kind of getting at not just what he wanted to see, but what are you feeling? What's going on kind of beneath all of this? How are you feeling? And what are you reporting to the board? So explain to me that. So it was just a lot of open-ended questions that I was asking him. And what dawned on me was he wanted qualitative info, stuff that could not be on reports, nothing kind of quantifiable. And when I say qualitative, he wanted to hear what are the conversations we're having as a team with our donors. And at the end, that could instill the confidence that kind of he needed to know that donors are responding in a positive way. They might not be, that might not be translating to donations, but at least these are the conversations people are having. So what came out of all of this was we ended up creating kind of a sharing circle at the end of the week. My team, now we're of course doing this virtually, but my team will come together with him and our VP of fundraising. And it's not long, it's maybe 20 to 30 minutes of sharing one story that they had that week from a donor conversation. And it's just, it's wonderful. And it satisfies the needs of everybody, right? Of kind of, and also at the end of the week, what a great way to end off a week. Is to talk about stories, and not, I will tell you, not all of them are super positive. Some are like, you know, not happy with what your organization's doing, and you know, that's okay, right? I mean, we need those real stories, but it's just a wonderful way to come together at the end of the week. But certainly the CEO feels in the loop about what's happening, and that's at the end of the day what he needed.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many things about that I love. And the first is it's just, it's such a great challenge to everybody in the development world who spends several hours every week or every month, you know, putting together reports that literally nobody is actually interested in, right? And we do it because of habit, and they get 90 seconds of airtime at a board meeting or whatever. So I love the creative thinking that said, maybe this isn't the right thing. But the other thing I love about that is that it's really switching the perspective a little about asking, you know, like, what do we need? Not what do we need from our donors, but, you know, what do they need? What can they teach us? What can we learn from these conversations that we're having with our donors? And they're having all these different experiences that you get to aggregate into something now that you know about the community, about your community.
So, that's right. Well, and actually, you bring up a good point, Margaret, is not only is it sharing kind of what people are saying out there, but it's allowing us to then take that information and be strategic as we move forward, right? So it actually, I mean, it started out as just being, hey, let's share what people are saying. But there are times when we then find ourselves getting into a strategic conversation, which is a whole other issue, because someone's like, Friday afternoon, to then go into a whole load of, like, you know, work. She's like, I'm not prepared at 3 o'clock to then start a whole new thing. Like, you know, maybe we should be doing this Monday. So anyways, it's been interesting and incredibly helpful, I think, for everybody.
Yeah. I think that it's such an important reminder too. Like, I mean, that's the thing, like you're talking about at the beginning, Sue, like there is so much pressure on your time that, like, that's the thing, like if you're spending time pulling reports, creating reports, redoing reports, you know, it's just like that is time that you could be like coaching your staff, you know, talking to donors, like actually having these meaningful conversations with the CEO. So I think it's just such a good reminder. And like, I love how you sort of framed it, Margaret, is like, it's just really easy to fall into these ruts of like, that's how we kind of do things. That's how we present this information. And I think you said, Sue, you sort of finally got to like, what is he feeling, right? It was like, there was some kind of frustration. And I love how, you know, you were like, no, you're not doing it yourself. I'm going to figure this out with you. We're going to come out the other side.
Yeah. I knew that there was something deeper, right? And I think more often than not, there is always something that is, kind of the underlying issue that gets people kind of riled. And so, you know, I think in this fast paced world, we don't ask enough questions. We don't slow down, and we don't ask what's really motivating this. And so, yeah, I had my coaching hat on. And so it's, you know, I'm a true believer that we're coaching all the time, no matter, it's not just in these formal coaching conversations. There's so many opportunities to just dig a little deeper. So,
yeah.
That makes me want to ask, because I hear from lots of my clients and lots of development shops, you know, we used to be, right, a whole bunch of extroverts who are chatty and social and who had a kitchen to talk in, or, you know, a table or walks to take together. And They're really struggling with how to keep connection within their team. And I'm guessing that you've done some things that are working for your team to keep them feeling whole and social and like they're still part of a family, even with remote work.
Absolutely. I would say, so it's interesting, Margaret, because when we all went into lockdown, my team was actually a remote team. So I've got 5 fundraisers, all strictly doing individual major gifts. And so it was 2 years ago. So I guess, 2 years before the lockdown. So I guess 3 years ago now, when I had made the move of pushing my team out of the office, it kind of happened mainly because we needed the space. We needed some office space. And so, but I also felt that my team did not need to be in the office. If the majority of our work is meeting with donors, then you should be out. And that meant not working from home. So that's the other clarification. It was a remote team working out in the field, basically. So they would go out with their laptop in the day and be out, whether it's coffee shops and meeting for lunch and out at events, different things. So when COVID hit, fortunately we had some really good tools already in place of how do you stay connected when you're a remote team. So, and in fact, I had done, I had written something maybe 2 years ago about this, and somebody had said, the fact that you have a remote team, it doesn't really resonate with everybody. Like, it's not really a topic that we need to be talking about. So then it was interesting when this hit, I'm like, oh, really? Because now
we're talking about it now.
Yeah. Everyone's talking about it. Different little things. And again, I would assume that all the listeners have some amazing techniques and tips that they've learned over the last year. The biggest thing is just stay connected, whether that's have Zoom calls. I mean, we have, of course, our weekly team meetings, but we also try to have some fun because that's the difference. Like, our team is very just so close. And we've been together in the development world, we know turnover is high. We've been together, most of us have been together for at least 7 years, which is a long time in this world of fundraising. So I credit just the wonderful synergy that we all have together. But that doesn't come without work. And so we do connect in many different ways. So we have a group chat on our phone that any meeting we have, doesn't matter what it is, we'll come out of the meeting and it's the first thing we'll do is we'll text the group just to say, had a great meeting, had a funny meeting. Hey, this happened. But it's not just about meetings, like different things throughout the day that we'll see. We send a text to be like, hey, has anyone looked outside right now? Like the moon looks awesome, or that sunset is cool. Little things that their kids or grandkids will do. It's so important to stay connected when you're not seeing each other every day or every other day. And those little bits of connection go a long way. So that's, that's my bit of advice for anybody as we're working now in this world, to stay connected, whatever way you can, figure out a way through our phones, our computers. And now, we are now, I don't know where you are in your world and what's happening, but some outside, we had a fire party the other night, all socially distanced. We're allowed to have groups of 10 outside. So there was 7 of us just around a fire and socially distancing. But it was great. It was the first time we'd seen each other, I think, in 5 or 6 months. That was amazing.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So as you know, Sue, because you listen, long time listener. first-time caller. We love to give people something concrete to try. And you have this great piece. I really, if people haven't read the blog yet, go back and listen to, or read the blog. It's 3 ways to balance fundraising and leadership priorities. But tell us quickly about your gemstones, and then give a challenge to our listeners to implement something like that.
Absolutely. So this idea came forward around 10 years ago. And actually, I started it just around my donor work. So it was before I was leading a team. I felt that I needed to be focused, even in my fundraising, managing my portfolio. I knew that I needed to connect with a donor every day. And I needed to make a move from wherever that relationship was. And so in order to stay focused, I had a bowl of gemstones. So back 10 years ago, I just had one color. So I had blue gemstones, and I would come in the office and I would have 5 of them sitting in a bowl. And then on the other side of my desk, I would have an empty bowl. And so I was not allowed to leave my office at the end of the day if I did not have. So I had set up an arbitrary number of 3 gemstones. I wanted to move 3 gemstones from that bowl over to the empty bowl. But the only way that I could move a gemstone was if I connected with a donor. And so the idea was that I would have 3 connections every day with a prospect or a donor, or whatever I defined that to be. And so I loved it because sometimes at 4 o'clock, I'd get busy, as we all do, and sidetracked. I would look and I would see 1 gemstone. And you know, my day was kind of getting close to the end. I'm like, I am not allowed to leave. I'm not leaving until I move 2 more of those over. And so it forced me to be focused and to know that I was doing donor work, because that's ultimately what my job was. So how that evolved then, and as you said, Janice, with the blog, this challenge of this back to this trifecta challenge that I'm faced with all my different competing priorities. I developed the same system, but I have now 3 colored gemstones because I have these competing priorities of working with these different groups. So one is obviously for donors. The other one is working with my team, and the other one's working with my CEO. And so I put a little less pressure. I still have 3 gemstones to move over, but it's 1 in each group. So as long as I'm talking with 1 donor a day, someone from my team every day, and then touching base with my CEO, and that, I mean, that's always very different too. It depends on where he is at with board meetings and different pressures he has, but it could just be a quick email. So it's always a bit different what that looks like. But at the end of the day, I am moving 1 gemstone from each one of those bowls over to the empty bowl. And sometimes I move 2 from a donor pile, which feels really good. Sometimes I move 5 from my team bowl. So, you know, it allows me also, which is interesting, and I didn't mention this in the blog, but it allows me at the end of the day to actually be able to visually see where I put my energies. And if I see, wow, I did a lot of donor work today. I touched base with 5 donors. Like, that feels really good. I mean, don't get me wrong, every bowl feels good, but sometimes you just, at the end of your day, you think, God, what have I done? Well, this gives you the visual of, I spent time with my team today. I spent time with my donors, not so much with my CEO, but I did check in once. So as long as there's 1 check-in for each, I feel like I'm balancing. That's the whole thing, is balancing these competing priorities. It's so easy to go a week and not talk to a donor, or to go a week and not talk to anyone from your team if they're not connecting with you. And that's not, it's not healthy if you're not touching base with groups that you should be in order to do your job. So that's how I organize my day. And so my challenge to everyone listening is go out and buy the gemstones. You can go fancy, or you could just go plain. You know, you can choose whatever you want. I got mine at the dollar store, so I invested a lot of money. But as I shared with Janice and Margaret before we started this podcast, that I bought the gemstones when I had this idea 10 years ago. I bought a bag and it sat in my office for a year in my cupboard with the idea that of doing this. But I just, again, things happen. It happens. And it sat there for a year. And every day I would open my cupboard. I'm like, what am I doing with these gemstones? Like, you know, this idea is so great. Obviously not so great because I'm doing nothing with them. And so anyways, finally got into the habit, because as we know, it takes work to get into a habit. Started doing it. And now it's just such a part of my day. And now I've got the three different colors. So I've grown to the colors. So my challenge to you is go out, buy the gemstones, put them in a bowl, and then have an empty bowl and start doing it. You might miss a day, you might miss a couple days, but once you get into the habit, I think that you're going to love it. And it does allow you to focus on that. So go out, buy the gemstones and have fun with it and choose different colors if you want.
Yeah. And it says a lot that 10 years later, it's still a structure, you know. I mean, that's what we talk about in coaching, like having structures, right? And that's a very tangible structure that I love what you said, like it not only gets you to do it, but it also lets you really acknowledge yourself and sort of celebrate your successes at the end of the day. So that's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Just hearing some brain science, that our brains get just as lit up by the little triumphs of moving something from one bowl to another bowl. So, yeah.
It's even more fun than a checklist, right? I mean, checklists are very satisfying. It's very satisfying to check.
It's like a tactile.
You can make it. And like you said, I mean, I'm envisioning like you can have really beautiful bowls, you know, sparkly gemstones.
Yeah.
Take this if you want it.
You can spend more than a dollar. Yeah.
Absolutely. I actually had shared this a few years ago with somebody who at the same time was on a challenge from a diet perspective. And had decided that they were going to fill their bowls with M&Ms. And at the end of the day, however much work they did, they were moving the M&Ms over to the empty bowl. At the end of the day, they could eat the M&Ms that they moved over. So that was the incentive, was to eat the M&Ms. I thought that was
funny. Like that might produce a workaholic really quickly.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Sue, thank you so much for speaking with us today. This was so much fun and so much pragmatic advice for people in the development world. So thank you.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for having me. It was fun.
Yeah. This podcast is brought to you by Fundraising Leadership. We provide unique coaching and training programs that powerfully transform how you work in order to get results. Please subscribe if you haven't already. You can find us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music Podcasts, and Spotify. And if you are enjoying the show, please rate and review us so others can find us. Our resource this week is a free tip sheet called The Three Hats Leaders Wear, and you can download it from our website, which is fundraisingleadership.org. Now, go put it into practice.